My Thanksgiving reading was James Dobson, and that actually sounds like a break from this.
Poor Jake. But you're doing this to yourself.
Yes. I'm not even making money on this. This is just pure spite motivating.
This is like you're giving yourself a James Dobson self-imposed spanking.
Oh, that turns him on. Hey everyone, this is Jake, and welcome back to I Hate James Dobson, a show where we deconstruct the works of evangelical butthead James Dobson. This is part two of the horrifically titled What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, Dobson's Feminist Manifesto. In this book, Dobson claims to lay out the top 10 problems women face. Last episode, we went through the first four problems: low self-esteem, fatigue, loneliness, isolation, and boredom, and absence of romantic love in my marriage. Today, we're finishing that list and reflecting on how what we have learned applies to our lives today. I hope you enjoy the show. There's another quiz in this book. He started the with
Can
the
you 10. Give me the quiz?
Oh, yes. They're true false statements. But so okay. He starts this book with these list of 10 things. He has you rank them, and then he tells you the order, and that's the rest of the book. Within this ranking, there's another quiz because he's a bad writer and has no original ideas. Okay. Brooke, true or false?
Yeah.
I believe people who are sincerely in love with each other will not fight or argue.
Well, Dobson believes that.
Tell me your perspective as a person.
Oh, me. Yeah. Okay, say it again.
I believe people who sincerely love each other will not fight or argue.
False.
I believe God selects one particular person for each of us to marry, and he will guide us together.
False.
I believe that it is not harmful to have sexual intercourse before marriage if the couple has a meaningful relationship.
Tricky, but true.
Sure.
Yeah.
I believe teenagers are more capable of genuine love than our older people.
True.
So you only agreed with Dobson on the first one. I believe that people who are genuinely in love with each other will not fight or argue is false. Dobson says that's also false.
Okay, good.
Yeah. He does believe that God selects one particular person for each of us to marry.
How could there just be one person?
So as a marriage and family therapist, I believe that there are people that are a better fit for you.
Sure.
But soulmates are not found, they are made. You right. need to invest in a relationship. And you could make a meaningful relationship with, theoretically, a number of people work. It's about who you choose, who you invest time in. I reject wholeheartedly the idea of the one for anyone.
It's also about where you are, right? Yeah. Like, the person who would have been the one for me when I was 21 is certainly not the one for me at 44. Mm-hmm. Like, it is about who you are and how you've evolved and what growth you've had in your own life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then how you grow together. But I certainly feel like there are lots of people that would be compatible with me in a lot of different ways, and hopefully I would find those people throughout my life or learn about who those people would be or what they would be like.
Nope, there's just one and God picked you. Good luck.
God, out of 7 billion people, I gotta find this one.
It's kind of a meme at this point, but in especially young evangelical circles, the idea of like, hey, I think God's calling us to date each other. And that's like a pickup line. And the amount of times I had friends when I was an evangelical say, like, I'm pretty sure God picked this person for me to marry. That's why I was allowed to date a girl. My parents did not want me to date. I had to prove to them that I thought God genuinely wanted me to marry this woman before I was allowed to even date her.
Oh my God. It's so weird to think of you being...
I was 15!
Yeah, 15. It hurts my brain to think that I, because of our age difference, which doesn't really come into play very often, that there was a time in this world where I was a full grown adult, like watching strippers at Sidetrack while you were still this evangelical preteen.
I came out less than 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Wait, where was I? Oh my God, I was already in my full ass 30s.
I believe that it is not harmful for sexual intercourse before marriage if the couple has a meaningful relationship. I don't think it's harmful even if you don't have a meaningful relationship.
Yeah, I mean, that was what was tricky about it.
Sometimes you find yourself in a glory hole, but sometimes in a glory hole, you find yourself. I'm so sorry, Mom. And I believe teenagers are more capable of genuine love than older people. You said yes.
I mean, I'm being a little facetious.
Sure.
But, like, maybe not genuine love, but, like, certainly romantic love, right? Like, teenagers do everything more romantically and passionately than adults do because we're tired. But, like, I don't know. I'm being silly a little with this one. But go sometime and watch teenagers put on a play when they've just discovered theater. And they are so earnest, and it is the biggest night of their, like, fucking lives, right? This is how it feels to have your first kiss. This is how it feels to have, I mean, not for everybody, but, like, yeah, I think it is, and you don't have a history of people behind you that you've dated and, like, had breakups with and shit. It's all new and fresh and young and beautiful, and, you know, someone's having a midlife crisis. Someone got jaded. But I think, so no, I don't really think, like, true love, because that's more complicated, but I think romantic love.
I think it depends on what we mean by love. One of the things about my time as an evangelical that I actually really appreciate is there's, like, 20 different words for love in ancient Greek.
Yeah.
And that actually helped me understand a little bit of difference, but, like, what do we mean when we say love? There is, like, new passionate romantic love. There's also, like, earned lifetime. I've been married to you for 50 years and you know what my shit smells like, so now there's, like, deep types of love. Friendship love, family love, like, all these we call love, they all mean different things. If you find the person God made for you, you should court and then get married. You don't have to love them at first. Love is something you grow into.
I don't agree with that.
He's talking about arranged marriages.
Yeah.
He's advocating for arranged marriages.
This is that, what are they, the dillies? The daggers? The duggers?
Duggers.
The Duggars. This is the Duggar thing again.
He doesn't use the words arranged marriages, but that's in practice what he's proposing. So you talked a lot about, like, new love and firsts, and that's exciting. Dobson would agree, but he would say that needs to happen in the context of marriage.
Right.
18-year-olds generally should not get married.
Listen, watch those episodes of the Duggars where they start courting each other, and it's like they're holding hands like they are fucking, like, because they are teenagers and they just want to touch another teenager. They will marry whoever you stick in front of them because they want to have physical human romantic touch. So then they're all married by the time they're 19 or whatever, but it is wild watching the way that they sort of, like, crave. You've never seen such filthy handholding in your life.
When I was an evangelical, we made the difference between mittens and gloves.
Oh, yeah.
If you hold the hands as the mittens, that you can be, like, interested, but only when you are dating, you get that hot glove action. Fingers intertwined.
Did you date some young ladies?
I dated two and a half.
You did?
The first girl I ever kissed is a lesbian.
Oh, good job, you two.
I know, we found each other.
There is just one person for each one.
And then the other two were in high school. One was not, she was a Catholic, so she wasn't really a Christian. Uh-huh. And the other one was the evangelical girl that I had to wait 6 months to date.
Your parents loved her, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
I have a plan to read a book not written by Dobson, but influenced him, all about courting and dating that was incredibly influential, called I Kissed Dating Goodbye.
Okay, but one more thing. Can I tell you, did you know that... what's his name? Kirk Cameron. Did you know that he was in a movie where he had to get married at the end? They said, you may now kiss the bride. And they for that shot, pulled the actress out and put his wife in. So it's his wife's lips that they show him kissing.
Brooke, I've seen that movie. Brooke, that movie's called Fireproof, and it is a trash fire of a movie. It is horrible. It's theoretically about saving your marriage, but it's all about how you need to financially invest in your wife, and she's a good financial investment.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So yes, I'm very well aware of that. That was given to me as a story of how you need to be committed to your spouse.
Oh my god.
Gross.
Gross.
This chapter ends with, why are men so uninformed about romance?
Yeah, why?
They haven't been told.
Oh, by women.
What I've been attempting to say is that a woman's need for emotional fulfillment is just as pressing and urgent as the physiological requirement for sexual release in the male. So as much as men need to fuck, man, that's how much women need you to love them.
Wow.
Which is just gross.
It is just gross.
It ends with a quote that I think is interesting when we're talking about patriarchy. Someone once said, a woman wants a man she can look up to, but one that won't look down on her. That quotation is very old, but it has weathered the women's liberation movement and is still rather accurate. I actually don't hate it, but it doesn't have to be gendered in that way. I want someone who I can look up to. I want my partner to have amazing attributes maybe I don't have, or does something better than me, but doesn't look down on me for that.
I mean, so far that's this whole book. It's like how people would like to be treated, right? I mean, for the most part. It's like, yeah, romance, love, respect, don't be an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Let me out of the house one time a week. But, like, I don't... It's like, because he's only asked women, right? Then these are now women's problems.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't ask the, you know, 60 husbands at the church what their problems are. It's like, these are just people problems.
Number 5 on the list, financial difficulties.
Oh, right.
This one is short. Dobson says the way to address your financial difficulties is to be less materialistic.
Women be shopping.
Yep. Quite literally, he says, you do not need an electric can opener.
Oh, God.
That's, yeah.
I'm going to fall on the floor and die.
The second half of this chapter, it's not a super long chapter, but the second half is a basically unrelated just rant about how much he hates astrology.
What does that have to do with finance?
I don't think it does. It doesn't really. It just... He doesn't have a Q&A, so he had to go off on some other rant. I'm not here to shit on anyone's spiritual beliefs. You like astrology, that's fine. I hope you find meaning in it. But a lot of his gripes about astrology could be said to him verbatim about his beliefs in Christianity. Specifically, quote, one serious concern is that it, astrology, offers a substitute for rational judgment and wisdom. My guy. My dude.
Yes.
Look in the mirror. The call's coming from inside the house.
Oh my God. But why is this in the financial stress section?
I think the segue literally is like, I have something else I want to talk about.
Okay. Yeah.
Or people have been making financial decisions based on their horoscope, and that's been a problem.
Oh, okay.
Some like very vague connection.
I would love it if he was like, I really hate astrology, and wrote a whole thing, and he was like, especially Virgos.
Fuck Virgos. Of course, you have to make it about you. What a Virgo thing to do. again, he makes, in this chapter, astrology stuff aside, makes a rather salient, if somewhat juvenile, critique of capitalism. They were constantly fed a barrage of advertising telling us that we are inferior because we don't have all the things.
Right.
But he views this as a problem of the heart, not a systemic problem, and cannot criticize capitalism. It's your fault that you feel like you need to own an electric can opener. And now it's time for Silly Songs with Larry. No, now it's time for the best chapter, Sexual Problems in Marriage. I just wrote for this one, men have peepees and girls have hoo-has. There is so much gender essentialism in this chapter. It's all about men want this, women want this, and they're dichotomous. It starts with the critical differences between men and women. Men are excited by visual stimulation. Women are stimulated by a sense of touch.
Wrong.
No citations.
Right. He's like... Shirley is excited by
Shirley's
touch.
All about the nips, but so I do kink professionally. I am a sex therapist generally. I have friends who are sex nerds. One of my friends did an experiment on himself. This person has a penis, and so attached a blood, not a full blood pressure cuff like goes on your arm, but similar concept to their penis, and tracked their blood flow and what turned them on or not, and they isolated each one of their senses to see actually what turned them on. And for this person, it was sound. Sound was the most erotic thing to them. Unless you're doing an experiment like that on a mass scale, James Dobson, you cannot just state that up top. What are you talking about?
Right.
Men are attracted to bodies, women are attracted to the people inside. What?
Right.
Where did you come up with this?
It's just made up.
Yeah.
Like some.
Sure.
Sure.
I guess.
fine.
Yeah.
And other people know.
There's an intimacy inventory they give a lot of the couples that I see in couples therapy. And one of the questions is literally, which of the five senses is most erotic to you? To touch, to taste, to smell?
Yeah.
Because everyone experiences sex differently. It may be, I do not believe so, but it may be that in general, people assigned male at birth are more visually oriented than women. I'm open to that possibility. Show me the studies and then we can talk.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It also could be that they are conditioned to believe that, yes. Right? To look at porn or to admire a female body or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And women are not conditioned. It's like dirty or impure or wrong if you do that, right? So they are conditioned to receive love and receive touch, right? So the conditioning might say that. I don't know that it's necessarily true.
No. Also, blindfolds exist and men love blindfolds.
Yeah.
Hence, there's some validity to complaint by women that they've been used as sex objects by men. Some validity. masculine self-esteem is more motivated by a desire to conquer a woman than he is becoming the object of her romantic love. These characteristics are well documented in the professional literature and then gives no citations.
Whoa!
Yeah. You can't just say shit like that. I mean, I guess you can, but like... that
I would love it if I was in grad school and I was writing an APA paper and in parentheses I could just put well documented.
Citation me. I don't believe this is an inborn characteristic. I do think it is socialized into men in a patriarchal system, this idea of domination and conquering women.
Yes.
I also think that's a problem.
Yes.
Dobson makes no such distinction and thus talks about men as if they are slaves to their primitive and lustful passions. Men just need to fuck. Men just see a beautiful woman and just instantly need to fuck her. It's not their fault. It's just how nature wired them. It also removes a little bit of culpability from men who
assault women. Yeah, I was going to say, but it is her fault for being beautiful.
Literally, women need to not... Something that was... Thankfully, I did not receive the most of this because I was assigned male at birth. But I heard so many times it is women's responsibility to dress modestly so they don't invoke the lust of men. They don't tempt the men. They don't cause them to stumble. It's their responsibility and fault.
Yeah.
Sex for men is more a physical thing. For women, it's about deeply emotional experience.
Wrong.
Not asking why. Not asking can this be changed or even is this good. Just it is.
Also, no room for like both.
No.
Like sometimes. Sure. Yes. Sometimes no.
And sometimes in one person, it can be both.
Right.
People have sex for so many reasons.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like there are times where it's deeply connecting and romantic and there's times you want to bone.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Quote, a man can come home from work in a bad mood, spend the evening slaving over his desk or in his garage, and watch the 11 o'clock news in silence, and finally hop into bed for some nighttime romp. The fact that he and his wife have no tender moments in the entire evening does not inhibit his sexual desire significantly. That makes me sad. That makes me really sad for the men he's talking about.
Yeah.
Men actually do want to be soft and loved and gentle and...
But also... That also happens to women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, women can get in bed after not connecting with their husband all day and have a little nighttime romp. And, like, it's, again, it's people. He's talking about people. Okay.
He takes it a step further, though. I would specify the importance of romantic love to every aspect of the feminine existence. It provides the foundation for a woman's self-esteem, her joy in living, and her sexual responsiveness.
Okay, so if you don't have romantic love, you don't have self-esteem.
You have low self-esteem, low joy in living. Not necessarily none, but yeah.
Okay. This is that horrifying thing that I have to, like, undo with all my clients, where it's like, oh, you were raised to believe that, like, Disney princess life.
Yes.
Is marriage, kids, like, that whole thing. Did you ever get asked if you want that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Most of us need romantic love in our primary relationships. The fact that men reportedly have less of a need is a sign of how we've cut ourselves off from our own humanity for the sake of masculinity. It's sad. Also, a woman's self-worth should be wholly dependent on her romantic partner. Or anyone's. He does talk about some actual problems in sexuality in relationships. One is variability in desire. This is known as desire discrepancy. Unsurprisingly, through this gender centralist lens, Dobson says that men are always going to want sex more than women, which is not true. And in fact, if a woman desires sex more than men in a relationship, there can be a lot of shame on all sides that she's being too slutty or he's not being sexual enough or whatever. The idea of like not being able to fulfill your woman's needs is a big source of shame for men. being seen as a whore is a big source of shame for women. He said, quote, men hunger for sexual release more consistently than do women. This next quote sent me over the moon. Quote, when the sexual response is blocked, males experiencing an accumulating physiological pressure which demands release. Two seminal vesicles gradually filled to capacity. As the maximum level is reached, hormonal influence sensitizes the man to all sexual stimuli. Thus, the woman should recognize that the man's desire is dictated by the definite biochemical forces within his body, and that if she loves him, she will seek to satisfy those needs as meaningfully and as regularly as possible. So number one, Dobson is anti-blue balls.
Can you please just describe my face to the listeners?
Brooke is sitting here in kind of stunned silence, mouth agape, eyebrows raised, eyes wide open, just kind of dissociating a little bit, staring off to the side.
It's basically like, if you love me, you'll suck me off.
Yes. It provides space to condone marital rape. He does not talk about marital rape in here. He does not say it's necessarily it's a man's right to have his wife's body whenever he wants.
He does say that if you don't do this regularly, you don't love your husband.
Yes. If you truly love him, you'll do whatever, which men actually don't need to get off. If they don't, the body has a way of relieving that pressure. Wet dreams. Also, you can just masturbate, even without porn, that's fine. He doesn't talk about masturbation. I have a feeling he's against it. But, like, masturbation is healthy. Also, if your partner is not wanting to have sex, you're not going to die. You'll be fine. You'll be horny, I guess. I know people who put themselves in chastity, a literal, like, device on their dick that they cannot use for fun on, like, days on end. They're fine. You'll be fine, too.
He doesn't talk about masturbation because he knows that you have to masturbate. Because he masturbates. Because he's a human person.
Everyone does. Unless you're asex. Most people do. It is incredibly common for people, even with the most strict internal religious codes, do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, not masturbating has no health effects. This is a side tangent, but like, NoFap is a bunch of bullshit. If you don't want to masturbate for your own life, that's fine. That's a choice you get to make, sure. But you're not, like, gaining any health effects from it.
Right.
Again, this paints men in such a gross light, driven only by definite biological or biochemical forces within his body. It's just gross all around.
He's so gross.
And then this quote, I think, is about me specifically. The vast majority of America's sex therapy clinics are operated by frauds, charlatans, and outright quacks.
Yeah!
That's me!
My little duckling, you are an outright quack.
Quack, quack! That's for you, Jordan.
Oh, we love you, Jordan.
Desire discrepancy is a real thing.
Yeah.
People do want sex in different amounts in relationships. There's ways to overcome that. The way to overcome it is not a person who wants sex less. Whenever your partner wants sex, give it to them. That can be a little bit of a potential solution. That could be one bit. Not whenever, but okay. I don't want to have sex, but my partner does, and I can be okay with having sex with them. That can be a choice that you make, but it cannot be the only solution.
Right.
Ideas like masturbating more or finding other ways of engaging in sexual pleasure or even potentially non-monogamy so that the person who has a high sexual need or a specific sexual need can get that met elsewhere can be okay.
Right.
Problem two, another common inhibitor to women is lack of cleanliness by their husbands. Dobson said straight men need to be taught to wash their asses. And honestly, yeah.
Yeah, not going to argue that.
That's fair. That's a true point.
He's right. Okay. Dobson was right about one thing.
You get one.
Mm-hmm.
And problem number three, media is intentionally trying to discourage women from being mothers for unclear reasons.
Yeah.
Quote, to sell the idea of a mother, being a mother means you are being cheated, bored, exploited, and wasted as a human being. To sell the idea that being a mom is a bad thing, women are cast as policewomen, surgeons, newspaper editors, or anything else than wives and mothers. In media. This is just like a weird victim complex of like increasing representation of women in other roles than being moms and wives means that they're denigrating being moms and wives.
Right.
Which is not inherently true.
No. That's so twisty.
Yeah. His solution is to take away freedom of the press.
Oh, that works. Yeah.
To make a central office which would register complaints and force media to change. And then...
He's just like unhinged grandpa.
Mm-hmm. America's weird, creepy uncle.
Yeah.
And then he goes on our first full-on rant against queerness.
Oh, God.
And it starts with a quote that I think you will particularly enjoy.
Okay.
The cover of a recent Cosmopolitan magazine posed the question, is bisexuality thinkable or even doable for non-nutcases? Get those nuts away from my case.
I need that cover of that magazine. I need it framed in my office.
I think we can find it. I think we can Google it. Let's.
Okay, yeah, we need to find that. That is incredible.
That's amazing.
Wait, say it again.
Is bisexuality thinkable or even doable for non-nutcases? What a freak.
That's so good.
He has an anecdote. Quote, a recent television program aired in Los Angeles on Saturday morning, a time when the greatest number of children are watching. Four aggressive lesbians were featured. They were not only discussing their sexual preferences, they were advocating female homosexuality with all the militant enthusiasm they could generate. Is it any wonder why homosexuality is considered contagious? It spreads, and this kind of publicity is the vehicle for its propagation.
What program was he discussing?
Just like a Jerry Springer, I'm sure, like just a talk show or whatever. Uh-huh. A couple very gross things. One, this is kind of a tangent. I don't like that we use the phrase sexual orientation to talk about being queer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like to have sex with dudes, but I'm gay not just because who I like to put my penis inside. I identify as gay because I was assigned male at birth, and I want to build a life with another guy. I'm romantically involved in them. I have a boyfriend. That is what makes me gay more so than who I put my dick in.
Right.
But number two, and more importantly, this idea of homosexuality being a contagion.
Yeah.
That is a very old school homophobic trope and has been used to justify incredible acts of violence against queer people. If we let you out, if we let you exist at all, it will spread and infect our children. And you need to recruit them because you can't reproduce and all this other bullshit. As opposed to queerness just being a variation of the normal human experience. So if he hates homosexuality, he hates bisexuality.
Oh, he really hates it.
You nutcase.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, I am a nutcase. It is. Let me tell you something, James. It's doable.
I thought you said I'm doable.
Well. Jury's out.
Number seven, menstrual and physiological problems.
Oh, here we go.
So this chapter, like I said, is not as bad as you would think. It's only 12 pages long.
Okay.
The chapter about how it's women need to talk to men better is 30-something pages long.
Okay.
And in this one, he's basically just talking about the fact that women going through menopause may benefit from estrogen supplements.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's basically the point of the... His wife went through menopause, was acting all sorts of crazy, but as soon as she got estrogen supplements, she was fine.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, like I said, it's not as bad as you think.
Thanks, Jimmy D, but like we can... You're right, like who is this book for?
My note to this, there's two, it just says yes. And second, he's talking about hormone replacement therapy, which is a typical prescription for women in menopause. That is a thing that it's proven to happen. And I guess back in 1975, it was less common as a prescription. But also, hormone replacement therapy can help a lot of people, not just women in menopause.
And also, I gotta be honest, I'm kind of amazed he's talking about menopause at all. Like,
because that's what his wife went through.
Yeah.
And he can only understand women through the proximity of people he's talked to.
Do you think Shirley Ghost wrote this?
I cannot believe that she did. I don't think she would say these kinds of things. He still is kind of gross about it, about how he talks about it.
Like, true.
I thought it was going to be like, bitches on their period be crazy, am I right? And it's a little bit of that, but it's mostly like, there are things you can do to help specifically women in menopause.
I mean, thank you, but like, we don't really need James Dobson's help for that.
Nope. No, we do not.
So.
Number eight, problems with the children, which is just more about women's isolation. This, I think, gets to some of the things we identified and we're like, what is this about earlier? Quote, fathers are working long hours and moonlighting to maintain a decent standard of living. When they do come home, they are exhausted and have little energy left to invest in their loved ones. And so it is that many wives have the full responsibility for the care of their children. Doesn't critique this at all, just says as a fact. Again, this like essentialism, it's not a socialized thing, it's just how we are. How do you feel? He does a Q&A. How do you feel about a man doing his share of the housework and helping at the meals at home?
Great. That's definitely expected and necessary.
This is a quote from Dobson. I dislike seeing a man work all day at his job and then be obligated to confront his wife's responsibilities when he gets home. Personally, I buck when I think my wife is demanding that I go beyond the call of duty. I like to help her on a voluntary basis.
Okay, I'm gonna scream. Because I said this earlier, the man gets to leave work and go home. The woman then never gets to leave work. She just keeps working.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He likes to make it seem a little bit better for himself. Quote, each evening that I am home, I oversee my kids' bedtime preparations, brushing teeth, administering the bath, putting on their pajamas, saying the prayers, and hauling for several glasses of water to each little procrastinator. So, like, he's working too. Kind of. He gets to make an appearance in his children's life, be the good parent.
Yeah.
And while she's washing dishes and doing whatever.
Yeah.
And then, even once they're done with that, then they go to bed, and then she still has to work as a wife to give him sex, if that's not something that she's actively desiring. So, remember back when we were like, why is he saying the solution to being overwhelmed by housework is tricking a teenager into, and why not have the husband help? Because he literally rejects that outright as a solution. Men do not need to help more than they do.
And helping. The idea that you're helping her.
Babysitting.
Babysitting.
Men, you're not babysitting your kids. You're watching your fucking kids.
Yeah, those are your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, how could she help you with your kids? Yeah, that is, and like, yeah, that I've had friends talk about that before where they're even like progressive, like people who are like, oh yeah, like my husband's like, how can I help you? It's like, this is your house. If you see a mess, clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a child screaming, shove something in its mouth. Like, figure it out. I mean, I think you can tell I don't have kids because I don't think you're supposed to just shove something in its mouth when it's crying.
I mean, more or less. Be specific with the thing. Make it like a child safe thing.
Yeah, not like a hot dog.
He then goes on to talk more shit about feminism. I don't know that we need to get into all of it, but he says, like, feminism asserts that it is impossible for a woman to be fulfilled when staying at home and raising children. Again, no citations.
No, here. And that's not what they're saying.
No. Patriarchy has forced women's value to be solely defined by motherhood, and that is bad. And also, women deserve a choice in what they do with their lives. Being a mom can be great. So can being single. So can be married. So can being a lesbian. So can being a CEO. Women deserve to choose what makes them happy and not be forced into any role.
People.
That's just feminism.
Yeah.
That's just, like, literally feminism 101.
Yeah.
Even your, like, second wave feminism and its own gender essentialist shit.
Yeah.
If you actually listened, if you were curious at all about what they actually meant, that's pretty apparent.
Yeah.
He cites a real renowned sociologist named Bronfenbrenner, but takes away the wrong message from Bronfenbrenner's work. This is a quote from, so Bronfenbrenner is actually,
oh yeah, Bronfenbrenner
is a person who I actually, like, really like as a sociologist, has some really interesting ideas. It was my introduction into systemic thinking and viewing people in a broader context.
Uh-huh.
The quote from Bronfenbrenner is, with the withdrawal of the social supports for the family, the position of women and mothers has become more and more isolated. With the breakdown of community, the neighborhood, and the extended family, an increasing responsibility for the care and upbringing of children has fallen on the young mother. That's a fair, valid, salient critique. Bronfenbrenner is correct. I like them a lot.
Great job, Bronfenbrenner.
Dobson's solution is just to focus on strengthening the individual family. Completely ignores community, neighborhood, or even extended family. It's all about making sure that we value wives and mothers more. And again, sure, that can be a valuable part. But the hyper-individualization that comes with a nuclear family is ultimately the problem here.
Right.
We need to address that part, make us more connected, build more community and relationships that are meaningful. Dobson rejects that outright. And just as a side note, there's another Lee Harvey Oswald reference here.
Stop it.
He's obsessed with this guy.
He loves all these guys. Okay.
It's very funny to me.
What does he say?
Just as an example of, like, a mother who's doing her job wrong will lead to a Lee Harvey Oswald. It's not that interesting on its own.
He really is mad at Lee Harvey Oswald's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's mentioned her a couple times.
And then we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about patriarchy as kind of an overview, but I think this is very important. I don't want to minimize the vital role played by a mother. I believe that a successful family begins not with her, but with her husband.
Of course.
if his ego needs are not met, the whole family falls apart. He's the head of the house.
Right.
Number 9, aging.
Oh, aging was one of the top concerns. I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. Women need monogamous, lifelong marriages to experience, quote, lifelong devotion, so they don't have to worry about aging or being unattractive.
What?
We're going to talk about this, kind of why he thinks so much about the nuclear family. But one of his ideas is that as you get older, you need someone who actually loves you and is able to validate that you are attractive to them, but they still love you. Because if you're an old widow, if you're an old maiden, no one's going to watch you. No one's going to fuck you.
Right. You scared me just now when you said that.
Men need women and women need men. That's the way it's always been. And then cites Adam and Eve, who did not exist.
Cites Adam and Eve like a citation.
Well, it says, like, we saw this in Adam and Eve. Right. And that's, yeah.
In this story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
He says it as if it's real. Young Earth creationism is what he's getting at here. The idea that Earth was literally made 6,000 years ago and Adam and Eve were literally the first people to exist. God literally made them. Noah's Ark is a literal thing that happened that flooded the entire world. All of which is completely untrue.
Right.
And was never meant to be interpreted as that.
Right.
But just goes with it. He doesn't really spend a lot of time in young Earth creationism, but I will point it out here just to say that all of these things are tied together and reinforce a worldview of each other. He says depression is often evidence of emotional surrender, which I find to be particularly gross coming from a therapist.
Yeah. Emotional surrender.
Mm-hmm. The last quote from this that I want to spend time with. The family was designed by God Almighty to have a specific purpose and function. When it operates as intended, the emotional and physical needs of husband and wives and children are met in a beautiful relationship of symbiotic love. When the family is polluted through sexual permissiveness or selfishness, or incredibly busy lives, then disease replaces health and despondency sits at the front doorstep. The American family sick today and the widespread depression of which I have written about is but a symptom of that malignancy.
Wow.
The reason you're depressed is because families are bad. And that is as systemic as he gets in his critiques.
Wow. I mean, we know we hate him and we know he's an idiot, but like he's dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the other reason I wanted to make this podcast. It's just not some fucking asshole who's saying shit.
Right.
It's that these have real world implications, whether it be child abuse or marital rape.
Right.
These things directly stem from his writings.
Right.
That is actually the least. That's number 10 on the list. Number 9 is in-law conflict.
Oh, yeah.
And he just doesn't talk about it at all.
What does he say? What is the chapter?
There's not even a chapter devoted to it.
What?
No.
He just ignores it?
He says, I'll talk about it in a bit, and then never does. It goes, menstrual problems, problems with children, and then aging.
Oh, my God.
And then the last word kind of to sum up.
And then he just never talks about in-law problems.
No.
Okay. Can I see the book?
So that's the book. Going through all of this, I want to revisit the question I posed up top. Brooke.
Yeah.
Who's the audience for this? Like, actually.
I mean, it feels like it's supposed to be men.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand.
Obsessively, yes. I would agree. Right? It's what wives wish their husbands knew about
women. Right. So the complicated title says, what wives wished their husbands knew about women.
So that implies that it's about men. No. He says verbatim, quote, let's face it, only 20% of the readers of this kind of book are likely to be men. So he's writing this for women to be like, I see what you're doing. I know your problems, but also here's how you fix them, and it's all on you.
I want you to know that the author photograph on the back is James and Shirley.
Aw, they're so in love.
This bitch is behind this.
I'm sure she probably played a role. You picked up on some things that I think are really important to note. His use of language is important. He uses wife and woman and housewife pretty interchangeably.
Yeah.
But feminist is always some bra-burning dyke type.
Yep.
And that is, those are the two types of women you're allowed to be.
Yeah, the only time feminist ever got interchanged was with lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And then bisexual was just nutcase.
So let's zoom out a little bit.
Yeah.
Why are these solutions so fucking bad? It's because Dobson cannot criticize capitalism or patriarchy.
Right.
So as we noted, he identified the correct problems a number of times. Yeah. Women do, housewives, people who run houses generally do get overwhelmed by the amount of housework that there is to do. These chores just pile up. But the solution isn't then trick a teenager to go getting help, right? The problem is not just that this exists. The problem is the systems that create it. He cannot do that. And therefore, he's forced into this weird corner with just the most bullshitty of bullshit excuses.
Yeah, that's so right.
In the previous book, he spent some time talking about how capitalism is the best system. And that really bleeds through to here. The pursuit of infinite growth, which is at the cornerstone of capitalism, that can always be improving, always being better, and you always need more profit, you always need to be increasing profit, is toxic for everybody. Infinite growth cannot feasibly exist in perpetuity. It is an impossible goal. And then also, in that model, you always have to be competing and competing. But you're not competing with fucking Bill Gates. I'm competing with you.
Right.
We're going for the same job. I don't care what Bill Gates is doing. There's one therapist position, there's two of us, so I gotta cut you down. And therefore, that feeds into this super hyper-isolationist, hyper-individualistic perspective of things. The only people that I'm not competing with are my family. Mm. And I can't be competing with my wife if she's working. She's got to be supporting me.
Right.
It also, like, gets into this, like, weird sexual anxiety. You need to reproduce in your family. Your kids need to take care of you, and they need to be good producers. It strikes me also that the term cuck was used for a while as an insult. And that is, like, cucking is rooted in sexual fetish. A cuck is a sexual fetish who watches his wife have sex with another man.
Yeah.
Typically, there's also a racial component to it. It's a white man watching his white wife be fucked by a black man.
Oh.
And that also gets into ideas of, like, the great replacement theory and stuff. Like, we're seeing how racism and sexism and capitalism are all intersecting in these really gross ways. Your whole family, through this lens, is turned into a machine to best support you while you go produce. And reward you with sex and validation and pride when you do. The nuclear family system was made to reproduce capitalism.
Yep.
Pretty explicitly, and Dobson supports that and validates that.
Yes.
It's gross.
It's gross. I'm so stuck on what you just said. It's such a valid point, right? Like, when you can't blame patriarchy and capitalism, then you just come up with these strange things. Because, like you mentioned in the beginning, right? It's like, yeah, why do girls feel this passive, like, pressure? Why do, like, all of these things, right? It's all capitalism, it's all patriarchy, it's all reproducing this nuclear family.
Yeah,
it's all fuff.
It's all fun of, it's all focusing on the family. And actually, that's a good point to the other part of this that I wanted to talk about before we go fully broad, which is his definition of family.
Yeah,
only includes the nuclear family. Choosing not to have kids does not mean you don't have a family, but to admit that having a family can look like a thousand different ways to a thousand different people, completely undermines his entire worldview of gender, religion, government, and hierarchy. There's a lot of language of, like, kids need a mom. Moms are great. I love my mom. I do think there are certain things that only a mom, a woman, can offer. Sure. But not having a mom in your life isn't on its own inherently bad.
It's interesting because there are so many types of families, even within his value system,
mm-hmm.
right? So obviously he's not going to support lesbian moms or, you know, chosen families in queer communities. But, like, yeah, what about single moms where a father is in the military or has died, right? Like, what about grandparents who live in the families, right? Like, all these things where his value system would technically condone it, but it's not the nuclear family.
And those are seen as a step down from the nuclear family. It cannot be that relatives raising you can live an equally happy, fulfilled, meaningful, connective life. I mean, you can through Dobson's lens, but, like, it'd be better if you didn't.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's gross.
Yeah.
So now I want to zoom out even more broadly, and let's talk more about Dobson's beliefs just generally.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a long quote, but I think this is a really good place for us to kind of, like, wrap up with, and this is all about the nuclear family. Why is he so focused on that? Quote, "Why do you suppose the reproductive urge within us is so relevant to cultural survival? It is because the energy which holds a people together is sexual in nature. The physical attraction between men and women causes them to establish a family and invest themselves in its development. It is this force which encourages them to work and save and toil to ensure the survival of their families. The sexual energy provides the impetus for raising healthy children and for the transfer of values from one generation to another. It urges a man to work when he'd rather play. It causes a woman to save when she'd rather spend. In short, the sexual aspect of our nature, when released exclusively within the family, produces stability and responsibility that would not otherwise occur. When a nation is composed of millions of devoted, responsible family units, the entire society is stable and responsible and resilient. If the sexual energy within the family, which is the key to a healthy society, its release outside those boundaries is potentially catastrophic. The very forces which bind people together then becomes an agent for its own destruction. And then he goes off to talk about how, when you look at the nucleus of an atom, it's the same thing. And evangelicals love doing this. They take a thing in nature and being like, metaphorically, it's the right. same. Whatever.
Right.
I think that that's really interesting, though. At the core of Dobson's beliefs, at the core of all of these interlocking hierarchies between slavery and patriarchy, white supremacy, the nuclear family system, it's the sexual tension that drives everybody. And that is such a weird, like, Freudian yes. way of looking at things.
Yes. That your whole family is structured around sexual energy.
Yeah. I like sex.
Sure.
I'm pretty sex positive and sex liberated. My entire life, as a sex therapist who does a lot of kinky shit, does not revolve around sex. That is not the main driving force in my life.
Right.
I reject this claim outright, and I think it says a lot more about Dobson than it does about humans generally.
Yeah. And also, I want to get my brain around this a second, because what he's saying is the sexual attraction that a man has for a woman and that a woman returns, well, her romantic attraction, I guess, can create this family, pass down the values, blah, blah, blah. Why would that be different for a gay couple?
Because they can't actually reproduce.
Oh, right.
I think. Obviously, the logic is flawed. And when you start saying, if this, why not this?
Yeah.
It kind of all falls apart, which is why Dobson doesn't get into these things. It's why he paints militant feminists in such a, like, all bad, they have no points, anything. Because if you allow any of these critiques to creep in, then it all falls apart. This was actually my deconstruction story. When I realized, oh shit, I'm real gay, I don't understand why the love that I might have for another man is fundamentally any different or less pure than the love I would have for a woman.
Right.
That just doesn't make... The way that you're talking about love being sacrificial and motivating and lustful and all these things that, like, theoretically evangelicals say is what makes a good marriage, I could do that with another dude.
Right.
Your logic falls apart here. If what matters is that sexual tension to reproduce values and whatever, that can exist here. You cannot question that logic, because then it all falls apart. It cannot let even a gasp in.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's when all you can do is return to religion and say it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really ever point to why.
If you're going for simple answers, which is what evangelicalism specifically provides, here's a hierarchy, here's answers, you don't need to think more. There's some comfort in that. But the minute you don't fit into that, the minute you start questioning that, you're either reprimanded and forced to fit back in or kicked out. There's no room for disagreement here. I want to end with just a little bit of talking about how patriarchy is bad for guys too.
Yeah.
We've talked about this throughout it. But instead of saying all the ways that it's bad for men, I want to talk to all the men in the audience, if you're listening.
What Jake wishes their husbands knew about patriarchy.
I can barely handle one boyfriend, let alone multiple husbands. You don't have to work yourself up into weird misogynistic knots to respect women. Dobson has a podcast worth of logic trying to show why controlling women is a sign of respect. Treat women like equal human beings. It's really not that hard to do. As we've talked about here, a lot of the problems women face are problems men face too. If they have a problem, listen to them. It's okay to tap into your feminine side. It doesn't make you gay to like painting your nails or to cry or to watch RuPaul's Drag Race or fucking whatever. You are much more alike than you are different. The reason that I reject this gender essentialism is for a number of reasons, but I think by focusing on men are this, women are this, you ignore the fact that any actual differences that exist between men and women, one, it's really impossible to tell what's socialized and what's not, but two, those differences really aren't the most important thing. They're not the story here. You are much more alike than you are different. Your struggles are deeply intertwined. All of the problems identified as men's problems, a lack of emotional intimacy, intense pressure with being a provider, losing custody battles frequently, these are all problems that feminists see and think are bad as well. But by identifying men's issues, you can be a feminist. You just have to extend to be like, and women also have problems, and they matter too. You're allowed to want softness. You're allowed to want romance. You're allowed to want to be submissive. You don't have to listen to creepy old fucks. You don't have to listen to James Dobson. God damn, I hate James Dobson.
But I love you, Jake.
And I love you, Brooke.
That was lovely.
Any words from you as our resident woman? Sorry. As our token woman. Our diversity hire on this podcast.
No, I have to go handle my period and my in-laws now.
Don't forget that electric can opener.
I Hate James Dobson is a labor of love, written, recorded, edited, and produced by me, Jake. I'm honored to be joined in this project by my amazing co-host, Brooke. If you're enjoying the show, please consider rating and reviewing it. If you want to connect with us more, you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at I Hate James Dobson, and on Twitter at I Hate J Dobbs. Special thanks to Drew, Lindsay, DJ, Jack, and Brooks. Our theme music is by Mood Maze, and the song is called Trendsetter. Thank you for enjoying the show.